Kyrie Irving's jump shot is good. James drives and easily finishes. And James off to a good start. James jumper. Again, LeBron James has the perimeter game going. Irving, crossover, pull up, got it. Here's Irving, steps back. Kyrie Irving, beautiful jumper from Irving. What a first half he's had. Spates gives him some room. James knocks it down. This might be the best we've seen his outside jumper consistently in the playoffs. James fakes, James drives, James finishes, and the foul. And a chance for a three-point play to tie the game. Irving gets free, banks it in, and a foul. James with four to shoot. Gonna have to knock up a three, and does. Irving on the drive, bank shot is good. Kyrie Irving again. Love finds James, who got free and an easy two. Now this is the largest lead of the game for the Cavaliers. Nearly falls, drives now, spins back, tough fall away, shot, it's good. Kyrie Irving steps back, he tries another three. That's good. LeBron James from downtown. Irving from three, bang. Kyrie Irving from way downtown. Irving drives, well defended, ball knocked away by Barnes. Iguodala ahead to Curry, Shumpert in pursuit, blocked by James, rejects it out of bounds.
How many times have we seen this play, to chase down, blocked by LeBron?
From a mental standpoint, it wasn't about anybody that was on the floor. We had a mindset that we wanted to come in here and just try to extend our period. That was our main concern. And we was able to do that. Our coaching staff gave us a great game plan. As one of the leaders of the team, we just went out and executed. You got a guy like this who's very special. Probably one of the greatest performances I've ever seen live. Put on the show that he did. And then just go out and just follow the keys and play winning basketball. We did that tonight. The main thing is that we was able to give ourselves another chance. I understood the magnitude of this game. I knew how great of a team we were playing. But you know, at this point, it's whatever it takes. You know, making shots and things of that nature is something that you sometimes you really can't control. Sometimes the ball go in, sometimes it don't. How hard you play, how locked in you are on the keys, you know, to get a victory.
Repeat a performance like this would, you know, definitely be tough, but whatever it takes to win, be very well prepared for game six. But that's the only thing that's on our mind right now is we're not satisfied. We understand the magnitude of what game six means for us at home. We know that it'll be an incredible level that they're going to play at, and we have to play at an even better level. When we stop caring about what everyone else said, honestly, what goes on in our locker room, I've said it multiple times, as long as we're taking care of what's going on in the locker room internally, we can power through anything.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, I'm not going to lie. I'm not even going to pretend to tell you. I told you they weren't done. I told you they could do this, and they still have a shot now. They're coming back home for Game 6. This is a series. It's going. I'm not going to do it. I did predict at the beginning of the series Golden State in 7, and if the Cavs were to win it, they would win it in 6. But the prediction was Golden State at 7. Obviously, the Cavs cannot win it in 6, but that was prior to the series. Yesterday, I had on Dennis Maniloff, joining us from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com, previewing Game 5, and Dennis and I both pretty much said, look, at about somewhere around 11:30, 12 o'clock tonight, the Golden State Warriors are going to be celebrating their second straight championship. They just looked too good in Game 4. The Cavaliers just looked too discombobulated in the fourth quarter of Game 4 to think that they could go into that building where Golden State has only lost 3 times all year in the regular season and postseason with them 48 minutes away from a title and actually get it done. So I can't sit here today and say I told you so. I am just sitting here on this roller coaster of up and down, of great and horrible, of good and bad, and not knowing where it's going to go next. Let's just put it that way. So welcome to this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We're trying to figure it out, and here joining me now to help me along this journey of trying to figure out what twists and turns we get next is Rick Nolan. Rick, of course, long time, some 30 years a beat writer for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and a guy who sounded just about depressed. Clinically depressed, I think might be the best way to say it, the last time we spoke. Rick Nolan, first of all, welcome back, good sir. How are you?
Doing well, Bob. Thank you.
You and I both, we just had such a downer of a conversation last week whenever we talked about where we were in this series. And it was after Game 4, of course. And now looking at Game 5 and what LeBron and Kyrie were able to do, we just put a little montage of the incredible show they put on last night. Where are you emotionally with this whole thing, Rick?
Well, you know, I don't mean to sound cynical, but I personally
don't root for the Cavs. I don't think it's my place. I don't root against them. I think it's my job to do my best to cover them as objectively as possible and not get caught up in whether they win or lose. So from a fan of the game, it was a highly entertaining game to watch last night, particularly the first half when both teams were clicking, and then LeBron and Kyrie just continuing to do it all night. I'm actually, Bob, finishing up a story right now, trying to explain the difference between how the Cavs played in Game 5 compared to Game 4. My point being that there's a very, very fine line between superstars being dominant and hero ball offense that ruins all offensive flow. I'm crunching a ton of different numbers, and I thought LeBron and Kyrie walked that line expertly last night. But when you go past all that, they simply were phenomenal and made some incredibly difficult shots that may or may not have been good shots had they not gone in, but they were playing so well that they kind of had the license in my mind to take those shots because of that and because they weren't getting a ton of help from their teammates. They may need to have to do the same thing again Thursday right now because it's hard to predict where other offense is going to come from this team. So what I liked about the way the Cavs played, Kyrie and LeBron specifically, is I thought they were more decisive and quicker in their moves last night than they were, particularly in the fourth quarter of Game 4 when they took 19 of the team's 21 shots. And Kyrie was struggling and still didn't stop shooting. Last night, any shot Kyrie took was a good shot because he was just in one of those zones where they were all going in. So I hope that makes some kind of sense. And it's the same fine line I think they're going to have to walk in Game 6 because they're going to have to carry the load. They have scored, I just added it up, 203 points in the last three games of this series, which is an average of 67.7 a game between those two players. So I don't think it's any secret they're going to have to be big again in Game 6, and Draymond's going to be back, so it's going to be a little different Golden State team defensively, but, you know, they're still playing. And, you know, when I talked to you last, I wasn't real optimistic that was going to be the case for them today. But, you know, they're flying back, and they're going to practice tomorrow, so we'll see what happens next time out.
A lot of ground to cover there, Rick. Really good stuff, and I appreciate the deep thought that you put into that. And by the way, I certainly didn't mean to suggest that as a beat writer and a journalist that you are a fan. But, you know, I mean, you know, if you're off on a week's vacation, I'm going to assume that if you're going to a game, it's you know, you're going to cheer for that for the home team. So I honestly don't, Bob.
I honestly don't.
Okay.
That went away from me a long, long time ago.
Rick, you truly are a journalist. I mean, you know, you cover the teams without passion or prejudice then, and I respect the heck out of that. There's none wrong with that. I, you know, being in the opinion business rather than the journalism business, you know, can certainly do this. So I apologize if I lump you into that.
I still have opinions, though.
But your opinions are objective in nature as a fan of the game, which I respect and get. Let's go to that fine line because exactly what you said, I thought of last night as I was watching it, and I was watching LeBron score one time down, Kyrie score the next time down, and then maybe one of them would miss, and then I would say, okay, guys, let's make sure to distribute the ball a little bit. We can't freeze other guys out. JR had a really solid first half, scoring the basketball. Don't just think you have to do this yourselves. We saw what happened in the fourth quarter of the Game 4, and essentially, I noted what you're talking about. They were playing almost the same kind of, quote, hero ball that people condemned in game number four, at the end of game number four particularly. The difference being that this time Kyrie was hitting what may have been called bad shots if they didn't go in. Whereas in game four in the fourth quarter, when he went cold, you know, he kept attacking. And I have a hard time being too critical of him for that, because quite honestly, and I think even you wrote about this a little bit, or tweeted about it, you know, LeBron wasn't in attack mode for much of game four. And the only guy that really looked like he wanted the ball and wanted to take that shot that was going to keep his team in it was Kyrie. But he took the same kind of mentality with game four and hit everything, or five, I mean. And of course, LeBron, the biggest difference was the jump shot. We talked about this. He was hitting outside early, but he didn't fall in love with it, which he has sometimes been prone to do. If he is, if he gets hot early outside, he'll keep taking them. And then even if they start to miss and become erratic, he keeps taking them. But he blended that outside shot, not just the three, but the mid-range jumpers as well, with the drives to the basket that were as strong and as polished with both hands as I've seen him in a long, long time. So the fine line you speak of is very, very fine. It works when they go in, and it doesn't when they don't.
Yeah, and it two couple things. First of all, it's amazing how open the lane gets for LeBron when he does make three or four perimeter shots in a row. You actually saw last night Golden State actually deciding they had to play him out there for the first time this series. And then he proceeded to blow right by guys.
Exactly.
And, you know, without Draymond in there, and without even Bogut in there to contest at the rim, they really were, you know, pretty open layups that he got. I also take two other things real quick, Bob. As phenomenal as Kyrie was, and he was phenomenal, I think he had at least three pointers last night that were catch and shoot, wide open catch and shoot. And he's an unbelievably good shooter in that area when he allows himself to be that, and when LeBron creates and gets him the ball. So I thought they did that very, very well. I also thought one other thing that shouldn't be overlooked is that the Cavs had a 9-point cushion going into the fourth quarter last night, whereas in game four they had a 2-point deficit. And Golden State clearly in that game was, you know, we're going to guard two guys with five, basically, at that point. Last night they had some margin for error, and the game never got to the point where they had, and I don't mean this to minimize how they play, so I hope people don't take it that way, but they never had true pressure-packed possessions down the stretch of that game. Golden State got within six early in the fourth quarter, and then Kyrie just ended the game with a phenomenal 7-0 run of his own, and LeBron had a 3-point play, and, you know, in the blink of an eye, it went from a 6-point game to a 16-point game. But Golden State missed tons of wide-open three-pointers, Steph especially, more open than he's probably gotten at any point in the series. And then they just had some horrific offensive possessions before and after those. They scored 13 points in the fourth quarter last night, and I think they were 12 for 45 in the second half. LeBron and Kyrie were 16 of 25 between themselves and outscored the entire team 39-36 after intermission. So,
did the Cavaliers do something different to defend Klay Thompson in the second half after he had that incredible second quarter? Because he only took two shots, I think, in the fourth quarter. And obviously he came out once it was academic and they realized it wasn't going to happen for them late in the game. But you know, while it was still competitive, he wasn't even getting shots. Did Golden State just kind of panic and go away from their hottest shooter and rely on Curry too much, who was not hot? Or did the Cavs do something to take him away?
I thought Shumpf did a pretty decent job in the second half last night, and I thought J.R., pretty much forgot who he was guarding for long stretches of the first half, and Clay made some ridiculous shots from well behind the arc, too. But, you know, JR knows one thing. He has to keep his body attached to Clay. I thought the Cavs did a better job of pushing him out further behind the three-point line, but then still playing him aggressively when he got the ball at that stage. I thought Golden State fell into trying to hit a five-run home run last night during certain points of that game. Once the deficit got to 8 and then the 9 and then the 10 and then to 11, it was like they were trying to get it all back on one possession when they know that they can't do that. And they just shot poorly. I mean, Cavs will say with some justification that they played much better defense, went from a 61-point half to a 36-point half.
Yeah.
So they had to do a little better. But the fact of the matter remains that they missed a ton of shots that they usually make. But even had they made a decent percentage of those, you just got the feeling last night that was a game that LeBron and Kyrie weren't going to let the Cavs lose.
Rick, we're talking to Rick Nolan, Cavaliers beat writer, about a 30-year veteran doing so, and this is just an amazing series to cover now. It is there for the taking for the Cavaliers to get this to a Game 7. No team has ever in the finals in 32 previous attempts won the series after trailing 3-1. All the Cavs have to do is win a home game, though, and then have 48 minutes to decide whether they can be the first team ever to do that back at Golden State again. Rick, when you talk about the absence of Draymond Green, a lot of people in the few people in the national media, but a lot of people in San Francisco and the Bay Area media are saying that anything that happened from last night forward has an asterisk on it if the Golden State Warriors don't win, because they completely disagree with the decision by the league to charge Draymond Green with a flagrant. With the groin shot that he threw at LeBron James in Game 4, and they say that his absence, if the Warriors lose, is going to be the reason why. Aside from their anger and that ridiculous notion, by the way, that LeBron was responsible for Draymond Green's four flagrant fouls that got him suspended, from a basketball standpoint, how much did his absence impact that game last night?
Oh, a lot. Andre Iguodala is a phenomenal defender, but what they didn't have last night was the ability to throw multiple high-quality defenders at LeBron. And there's a big difference when you're asking Iguodala to defend him for 40 or 42 minutes a game versus maybe the 20 or 22 that he defends him when Draymond is there and he takes the other 25. So that's got to wear a guy down. And then LeBron is just so much bigger than Iguodala that I think he had his way a little bit as the game wore on. Draymond, whether LeBron did anything that precipitated that whole thing or exacerbated it or anything, whether it was plotted or purely coincidence, Bob, who really cares? Because Draymond did what Draymond did, and nobody made Draymond do that but Draymond himself. He had to know his own situation. And if he got baited and he took the bait, that's his fault, not the Cavs' fault and not the NBA's fault. He put the league in a position where they virtually had to suspend him to maintain any sort of credibility.
Yeah, and his absence, I get it. Everything that you said about the multitude of talented defenders, et cetera, throwing at LeBron certainly helps, and I get it. And I get he's also their emotional leader, but his absence sparks some emotion too. From Sunday into yesterday afternoon, everybody who was around the Warriors, including the national game broadcasters last night, said they would describe the Warriors' attitude going into this one as simmering anger or rage. They are just furious that Draymond got booted. We saw the way that the Warriors crowd treated LeBron James with the boos every time he touched it. You know, the baby bottles, the crying this, the memes about not one, not two, but five NBA Finals losses, all of that stuff. They were furious. They blamed LeBron, even though I agree with you, it was completely misplaced and unjustified. It's what they did, and they almost had a win this for Draymond mentality, that his absence might have been more important than his presence would have been, because they really felt like their efforts were going to be redoubled, you know, just out of justice as they see it for Draymond. Given all of that, their inability to deal with LeBron, and maybe it's because of the incredibly inspired performance by Kyrie that maybe they just couldn't handle both of them. But LeBron James rose up at a time, and we talked about this yesterday. I know you weren't with us, but we talked about this yesterday. Be careful what you wish for if you're going to poke this bear as often and publicly as they were poking LeBron James, that you don't know what he might be capable of when inspired. Their inspiration was to win one for Draymond, and LeBron's inspiration was to just stick it where the sun don't shine, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. You know, when I listened to the Klay Thompson press conference Sunday, it's almost like, Klay, you should really probably just shut up and say no comment. Don't talk about LeBron's feelings being hurt. Don't get him any more fired up than he's already going to be. Let the sleeping bear lie, I guess. But like you said, they kept poking, and when jumpers started going down, they pretty much didn't have an answer for him. So we'll see what happens in game six. I think we're going to have another epically good game in that one. And if memory serves, Golden State's won 4 of the last 6 times they've played at Quicken Loans Arena. So I don't think they're in panic mode by any stretch. I don't think the Cavs in any way, shape, or form can say, oh, we're going home now, we don't have to play as well or as hard or as committed. They have to play every bit as hard and well and committed, or this series is going to end for the second year in a row on their home floor.
I don't think they have that either, Rick. I don't think they have that mentality like it'll be easier at home. I just feel like, though, and maybe this is the fan in me that I'll acknowledge, is saying that the confidence they have, the old momentum and all the other, you know, intangible type things that people talk about, that from winning there, from winning on their floor, proving that that can be done, I think the inspiration, whatever you want to call it, is there. And even they may even call back to and harken back to the first time, the only time in the regular season that the Warriors visited Cleveland this year, and Steph Curry made that kind of offhanded, flippant remark
champagne.
About it still
yeah,
smells
champagne.
Like champagne in the visitors' locker room. You know, they know that. They remember that. So I don't think they think it'll be easier, Rick, but I think they really feel a lot more confident about we're not letting that happen here in Game 6 Thursday night.
I don't disagree with anything you said. I will say that I think that momentum is probably the most overrated thing in sports. I think it's a result of actions, not something that does anything for you. You know, we saw how much a 33-point win meant when Cleveland came back and won by 30 the next night. We would have said after Game 4 that Golden State had all the momentum in the world and the Cavs won Game 5. So I think this game purely is going to come down to, and I'm not saying heart and drive and hustle. They're huge. But that's not momentum. That's playing. It's going to come down to that, executing, making shots, and defending. And I think whoever does that best, we're either going to have an NBA champion or we're going to have a winner-take-all Game 7.
I can marry those two things together, I think, a little bit, though, when I say momentum. First of all, I think there's a difference between underdog momentum, by the way, and favorite momentum. When an underdog, which the Cavaliers clearly are, you know, according to Vegas and according to everybody else with the 73-win Warriors and what they did in coming back against the Thunder and riding all of that in, et cetera, I think when you're an underdog and you have an opportunity to build on something, it means a little bit more, that momentum from a big win, especially a road win in their place where they've only lost three times all season, both in the regular season and postseason combined. But having said that, when I say momentum can build upon itself, the kind of thing that led to the 3-point barrage in the Atlanta series, particularly in game two when they hit the 25, all of those guys aren't that good of 3-point shooters, and yet everybody was making 3-pointers. It wasn't just, you know, Kyrie hit 12 and J.R. Smith hit 10 and everybody else made the three. It was spread around. So there's that contagiousness that sometimes happens. You see it in baseball too, you know, if you want to call it momentum, but everybody seeing the guy before him get a knock, it goes up there and just feels so good, and you just start doing it. And I guess if there's anything to that, maybe the performance last night, and I don't know, a couple of days in between games certainly doesn't help them, but maybe that carries over, that kind of confidence carries over into the game on Thursday night, if that can be called momentum.
We'll see if that's the case. I would remind you that Oklahoma City won games 3 and 4 by about 50 points and had all the momentum in the world and was unable to close out. So I don't know. They certainly, confidence is high. I'll grant that. But things can change quickly in this game, and they often do. I've kind of given up trying to figure out how teams are going to come out and how games are going to end up, particularly in this series where there's been such a wide range of performances and how players from both teams have fell back on, well, we weren't ready to play or we were soft. Well, this is the NBA Finals, for crying out loud. If you're not ready to play now, then something's wrong. So I think both teams will be absolutely locked in. The home crowd certainly helps, because regardless of what NBA officials say, you're not going to get a foul on Matthew Dellavedova like you got last night, where he did nothing but stand there while Steph jumped. That's a lot less likely to happen on your home floor than it is on the opponent's floor. So they probably get a couple 50-50 calls going their way. Maybe they get a little better performance from some of their role players. I don't think Kevin Love can be any less of a factor than he was last night. So he is going to start. Ty Lue has already said that. Maybe all those things together, and LeBron and Kyrie being terrific again, wouldn't be shocked at all if we do have a game 7.
Yeah, I it's weird. I feel the same way, and I just never would have imagined that at all after the way game 4 ended. I really thought it was going to be over last night. Last thing about Curry. You know, it's weird to have somebody be as up and down, as unstoppable, then as very, very pedestrian, or in some cases in the first couple of games, bad as he has been.
Right.
You know, for an MVP, for you, the first unanimous MVP in the history of the league's leading scorer, all those incredible accomplishments that he has gotten. What do you make of his, you know, 38 points and leading the way and being the MVP in game 4 to being very, very average and quite frankly, maybe hurting his team a little bit with some of the turnovers, some of the decisions, some of the ill-advised shots, et cetera, that sometimes he can make, but when he doesn't, he goes into stretches where he's very, very cold. How do you size him up?
Well, you know, I think that's part of the reason of being, you know, the difference between being 6'3 and 185 pounds and 6'8 and 260 pounds. When the shot's not going, not nearly as many options for Steph to turn to as there are for LeBron. He missed some really easy shots last night. Made some careless turnovers, but he's done that through most of the playoffs. That's part of his game. It's a kind of a high-risk, high-reward type thing, and more often than not, it's been reward. The Cavs have also just played him very well for the most part. Some miscues in game 4, but other than that, they've made him work a little bit, and you know, some of the shots he makes, you just kind of got to tip your hat to him and say, good, you're going to have to do the same thing again next time. Next time down the floor. So, you know, they don't need him to score 35 like I think, you know, the Cavs probably need LeBron and Kyrie both to come pretty darn close to 30 in game six again, I think, to win. They're going to have a little more versatility and weapons, so we'll see how it turns out, I guess. I don't know if I gave you a good answer, but...
Well, no, I mean, you know, I guess there really isn't one. It's just maybe to analyzing and trying to figure out what is not really decipherable, and that is how a guy that good and that dominant for such a stretch, a long stretch, can be, you know, invisible NBA Finals games the way he has been. And there is no real answer.
Let's point out, too, that, you know, the regular season is an entirely different animal where teams don't have a whole lot of time to lock in individual matchups, and now they do. So, you know, he got shots in transition, you know, throughout the course of 82 games that he hasn't gotten many of at all in this series. So, you know, he's had to work doubly hard. So,
yeah, very
plays a huge role.
And the other thing too is he has had so much pressure put on him on the defensive end. Obviously, he's not the primary guy guarding Kyrie Irving, but they get matched up oftentimes on switches and whatnot. And every time Kyrie has Curry across from him, he is putting him on a string,
attack,
and he is just dancing
attack,
and moving him,
yeah,
and running him and going by him and embarrassing him. And quite frankly, I wonder how much that impacts Curry's decision making on the other end, wanting to go back at Kyrie.
Yeah, not sure, but Kyrie. Like, you could see his eyes light up anytime he saw Steph on him last night. I'm just going to abuse this guy. He can't stop me. He doesn't have the quickness, the size, or the strength. And he did. Virtually every time Steph was on him, I think Kyrie scored last night.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they have to try to make happen again. You know, that's what Ty Lue's job is, and his staff is to figure out ways to get switches, screens, whatever it takes to get Steph switched off onto Kyrie and then let Kyrie go to work and hope that Kyrie's got that shot going the way he has for the most part of the last couple of games. Tremendous conversation, Rick. I really appreciate it. Thanks for breaking it down for us without passion or prejudice, but just enjoying one hell of a game five in the NBA Finals.
Always passion, but no prejudice.
There you go. So. Even better said, with the passion, without the prejudice. That's well said. Thank you so much, Rick. We'll talk to you again.
Sounds good.
Have a great one. All right, there you go. Rick Noland joining us. Follow him on Twitter, by the way. Rick Noland, Noland. Again, Noland, at Rick Noland. He's just a great Cavaliers beat writer, and you heard him. You know, he doesn't cheer. He doesn't root. He doesn't, you know, do anything to make the home team look or sound better, but he does cover that team, and he's going to tell you good, bad, or upside down what they are. All right. What they were last night was spectacular, and I want to get your thoughts on that, too, as we move forward today on the extravaganza. We got a few other things we're going to talk about. I promise you that between now and 5 o'clock, but we are guest-free the rest of the way. Guest-free. We're going to talk a little Mount Rushmore coming up, not the NBA's Mount Rushmore, the one that was somewhat mildly controversial regarding LeBron James and that whole story, but a different kind of Mount Rushmore story. And yes, we will talk about the Lions' big announcement as well, the huge new addition to the Lions. We'll get into that too. Believe me, the addition has nothing to do with offensive or defensive line, much more on in the way of tight ends. And I'll tell you what that means coming up right here on ESPN 106.5.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed an extravaganza, and it is a party this afternoon. Well, it's not a party right here, but, you know, again, look, we realize and recognize that not everybody is a LeBron James fan. I am not always a LeBron James fan. Not everybody is rooting for the Cavaliers in this series. But I got to tell you, there's not been a championship, a professional championship in the entire state of Ohio since 1990, 26 years ago, the last time the state of Ohio celebrated a championship. So I know full well, and so does Jim Cushlin. We are both Cavaliers and Indians and Browns fans. We know there are tons of Tigers and Lions and Pistons fans right here in Northwest Ohio and, of course, in Southeast Michigan. But I got to tell you, you know, the Pistons can't win this. They're not in this. They were. but the Cavaliers knocked them out of this. I got to believe that the vast majority of people around us right now are indeed rooting for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And it's because of that, it is a great feeling to see something as unexpected as last night happen the way that it did. And I got to say this, I really, really, you know, should apologize to some extent for, doubting, but just being such a pessimist, such a negative believer or disbeliever, if you will, in the Cavaliers' chances last night. I agreed with Dennis Manilov, who said there's no way the Cavaliers are going to win at Golden State with them 48 minutes away from a championship, wanting to celebrate it in front of their own home fans. All of those things, I just didn't think it was going to happen. But I did say this yesterday. I said, and it wasn't me. I was quoting from a Fox Sports writer who said, be very, very careful in taunting LeBron James as much as the Warriors fans and the Warriors organization and Maurice Spates and Klay Thompson and Ayesha Curry, Steph Curry's wife, as badly as they were. Be very careful. Because when you do that, you could very well be poking the bear of a guy who, quite frankly, did not have the urge or the feeling that he needed to do what Phil Jackson told him to do a few days ago, to put on the cape and carry his team. He said, I'm not that guy. I'm not Michael. I just, you know, the game comes to me. I'm me. I do it my way, blah, blah, blah. But we know, Jim, I said this to you yesterday. And we both referenced Game 5, 2007, Eastern Conference playoffs against the Pistons up in the Palace when he had 48 points and he scored, what, 26?
25.
25 straight in the fourth quarter and overtime for the Cavs. I'm trying to remember all the details, but that was one of the most superhuman efforts in the playoffs I had seen from anybody, and it was from a very young LeBron James. And I said, what if he reaches back into the Wayback Machine and turns one of those on just because of the way the Warriors are taunting, goading, prodding, trolling, etc. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't quite that night. And he didn't have to do it solo in the virtuoso performance he did that night at the Palace. But last night's 41, 16, and 7 performance was not that freaking far off. He went out there last night with something to prove. He took the taunting personally. He was offended. He was angry. He was ticked off, I promise you, at Thompson, at Green, at Spates, at everybody who was, at Stephen A. Smith, at national people who are saying that Green got hosed and he shouldn't have been ejected. All of those things, not ejected, suspended, all of those things. He was all of them. And he had every right to be, and he played last night like he was responding to all of them. It certainly didn't hurt that Kyrie matched him and maybe even exceeded him in his dominance last night. But they did. They poked and prodded and trolled a guy that maybe they didn't think could take over like that anymore, given his age and given maybe the way the series had gone. But last night, pride showed through the eyes, the glare, And it seeped out of the pores of LeBron James last night in answering all of those critics.
Yeah, and it kind of did. I mean, and what's interesting is some of the dynamics of some of those numbers you read from his line. Take the 7 assists, for example. Do you know how many he had at halftime? 0.
Well, they said 0. By the way, they were wrong. They missed one. Somebody tweeted it, and I saw it. Somebody tweeted,
right. I knew it was next to nothing.
Well, no. I mean, it said nothing. I mean, no, you're right. The line, I'm just pointing out. Somebody tweeted a vine of a pass in that first half. LeBron from the right wing, but kind of like in the mid-range area, just outside the key, kicked it up top to, I think, Kyrie, who hit a straight-on jumper from the top of the key. It was a very, very obvious assist, and whatever reason, the scorers missed it and did not count it. But you're right. They had him for 0 assists. He had one that they didn't count. But that was very, very key. And go ahead and finish your point about what that meant.
And kind of what, to me, what that means is, you know, obviously Kyrie and LeBron, you know, did what they did. There wasn't a ton of assists out there. But it shows that he has that ability, as we've known, to go to different parts of his game. And obviously, to me, the biggest thing for LeBron, and the only thing obviously that's different from the 07 game you reference is, unlike 07, he actually had somebody else to help him along the way this time. But everything opens up when he makes his jumpers. It just does. And because basketball's funny that way. You know, it's a game where there's a lot of rhythm involved. You know, take Curry last night, for example. You just look at his points. Well, 25, not a bad game for Curry. Now, for Curry standards, 8 of 21, 5 of 14 from beyond the arc. That's bad shooting for a guy like that. And it's all a rhythm thing. And once he started getting in that rhythm, it helped open up everything else.
No doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. You know, LeBron James hitting his jump shot early. Again, it's sometimes a blessing in, I'm sorry, a curse disguised as a blessing. Because sometimes that gets him shooting it too often, and even when it goes cold, he tries to shoot his way back into it, and he's just not good enough a perimeter shooter to do that. For a guy like Kyrie Irving, and yes, a guy like the incomparable Steph Curry, they do that as well because they know they are good enough to shoot their way back into heat, if you will. You know what I mean? You know, you get a heat check, what they call a heat check, when you yep. can't miss, and you just take one that's crazy to see if that goes in too. That's a heat check. Well, sometimes when a guy who's a great shooter goes cold, they keep on firing until they get heated back up again and do their thing because they're that great. Kyrie was tremendous for three quarters in game four, but he went cold and didn't stop shooting in the fourth quarter when many said he should have. But then again, LeBron wasn't attacking. Somebody needed to act like they wanted to score the ball. And you know, probably to the detriment of maybe like J.R. Smith, who didn't get enough looks, Kyrie kept trying to do that. And most people should be okay with that because he can shoot his way back to heat. The Steph Curry situation you just described, I think, is very similar. He is obviously tremendously able to go on big, long runs of four threes in a row, five threes in a row, the way Klay Thompson is and does, and make 8 out of 10 or 11 at a stretch. And so when he's cold, but he keeps firing, that is sometimes a blessing in disguise for the Cavaliers and a curse disguised as a blessing for the Warriors. He wasn't on last night, 5 out of 14, as you pointed, from 3, but he still took 14 of them. And that cold spell that he went through, and the Warriors' strange, mystifying refusal to turn it back over to Klay Thompson and get him in positions to get shots off again because he has been red hot in the second quarter. Those are the things that led, of course, to the Cavaliers' comeback, ultimately pushing the lead out to 4, then to 7, right. and 8, and pretty soon you're like, holy crap, the Warriors there, they're probably like, we're down 10. What's going on? And they just kept the pressure on from there.
That last part is a really good point, too, because honestly, I'm watching this thing the whole time, and even when they're going up 10 in the third quarter, I didn't start feeling semi-comfortable about it until we got into the midway through the fourth quarter, honestly.
I wasn't even comfortable
until late.
There
was a point even in the second half where they got it back to 6 before some big shots by both LeBron and Kyrie, you know, did their thing to bump it back up to, I think, 10 or 13 at that point.
Yeah, Jim, you were better than me. My son was like, we got this, because I watched him, my son. And you know, he said, you know, we good, about approaching maybe the six-minute mark, the midway mark of the fourth quarter. And I said, no, we don't. We could be even up 10, 11, 12. And you know how they are. Two quick splashes from Klay, if they fed him, and suddenly the 12-point lead is a 6-point lead. And they are just too good of shooters, the Warriors, as a team, for me to feel comfortable, even halfway through the fourth, up a dozen. I wasn't really comfortable until there were about 2 minutes left. And, you know, when Curry sat down and the Warriors essentially conceded, saying, okay, we're not going to do this. So that's, you know, that's a big thing for me is understanding and recognizing how good those shooters are and how quickly they can turn a double-digit deficit into a single-digit deficit and allowing that momentum to get over.
And real quick, I mean, yeah. I know a lot of praise for obvious reasons has to go to Kyrie and LeBron in this one, but tip of the cap to pretty much most of the rest of the team as well, because specifically on defense, I saw that energy that was totally there in Game 3 and not so much in Game 4. Which is a testament to the rest of them.
Yep, it is indeed. Let's get some people on the air. I apologize, my screen was blank for a moment. I did not realize we had people waiting to talk to us, so I apologize for keeping you waiting that long. Let's go to Mike, who is in Woodville, joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Mike, go right ahead, sir.
Hey, how you guys doing, Bob? Jim?
Good, sir.
Hello.
Hey, I'm looking at the next game of the finals because looking to Game 7 is too soon. You can't do that yet. But I can't remember who said it at one point, but they said that NBA players, based on how good they are and how good they are at the time, have something called gravity. Basically, when you've got a guy that's hot, or if you've got a superstar on your team, he pulls people to him regardless. And I think we saw
when
what
you say pulls people to him. Hold on, you mean defenders, or you mean other players
pulls
on his
defenders,
team?
Defenders pulls defenders to him.
Okay, gotcha.
So this pulls the defense away from what maybe they're typically going to do. So we saw what happened when it was just Clay and Steph Curry, not having a Draymond Green there. I mean, the Cavaliers trapped a lot more on Steph Curry, knowing that the outlet pass is going to somebody like Harrison Barnes or someone who really doesn't have that kind of pull to them. They were able to basically do everything they could to make Curry uncomfortable, which contributed to his shooting woes, I think. But going to the opposite side now, looking at Game 6 is going to be extremely important for everyone outside of Kyrie and LeBron, because what they're going to do to Cleveland is the same thing that we did to them this game. We did everything we could do to shut down Clay and Steph Curry. Now, they're different players. I'll grant you that 100%. But they're going to pool so much defense and so many defenders, and there's going to be more double teams. Probably even you're going to see double teams come into the top of the three-point arc even, possibly for Kyrie, because he was so good at penetrating. That's going to mean that Kevin Love, that's going to mean that J.R. Smith, the other people that are there that are going to then go and get open shots, or it's going to be so incumbent on them to show up.
And well, you hit the nail right on the head. There's no doubt that they're going to spend the next 2 days in film rooms, are the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr and his staff, figuring out how to make Kyrie as uncomfortable as they just did, the Cavs just did to Steph Curry. The X factor for me is still going to be LeBron James and his jump shot. If they double team LeBron James and try to double team Steph Curry, LeBron particularly, and I know this is going to sound weird since Steph is the point.
You mean that Kyrie Irving?
I'm sorry?
You mean Kyrie Irving?
What did I say?
You said Steph Curry.
Oh, my apologies. Yes, of course, I meant Kyrie.
No problem,
If they try to double team both LeBron and Kyrie, LeBron is such a phenomenal passer. He will indeed find the right guy, and the key is going to be finding them in places other than on that arc. And I'm speaking specifically of Kevin Love, who only took 4 shots last night. He needs the ball in a position to score. And if they're going to double LeBron, and LeBron's key, of course, like I said, will be hitting that jump shot early so that they know, holy God, he's hitting that now. We got to go out on him. And then we've got to have a second guy sitting back in the lane ready to, when he blows by our defender who's challenging on the jump shot, when he blows by him on the drive, we've got to have somebody there. That's going to leave Kevin Love. That is going to leave Tristan Thompson. And JR, of course, can go wherever he wants. But it's going to leave them open, and they're going to have to hit shots. You're 100% right about that. The other key to what you just said, though, is, and this is a coaching thing, you know. I mean, sometimes you just think that great players make the greatest plays. But the coaching of what Kerr is going to try to do to double up and make life miserable for Kyrie and LeBron the way that the Cavs did for Curry and Clay is what Ty is going to have to be sitting there encountering and saying, what can we do to facilitate the Kyrie versus Steph matchup again? How many different picks can we run them off of? How many different plays can we draw up where they have no choice but to make Curry go over a screen and end up getting stuck on Kyrie? And when Kyrie sees Curry, well, you saw it last night, his eyes light up and he just goes to work on him. And I think that impacts Curry on the offensive end as well when he's just futilely chasing Kyrie Irving around the other end of the floor.
And you're absolutely right about LeBron. If LeBron's jump shot's falling, I mean, you've seen throughout the playoffs, they have dared LeBron to take that 3-point shot, take the mid-range jumper. and they're just trying to shut down him going to the lane and laying the ball in, which he right. still does, which is miraculous. I still can't understand how he's able to do it, considering the amount of contact he gets without getting calls. But neither here nor there. I think it's going to be more on the – if LeBron's hitting this shot, they're going to probably try to live with it, even as crazy as that sounds.
No, it's not because he can go just as cold. I think you're spot on. I think that probably will be their strategy, that if given the choice, you know, picking your poison here, they will indeed see what LeBron does outside. Even if he's hitting early, they're going to live with that rather than the obvious when he goes by them and does not miss inside. I think you're right. And my friend, I got to run, Mike. I'm already late for our top of the hour break, so I apologize for that. Thanks for the call. But I think that will be what they do. And at the end of the day, my opinion, I think the Cavaliers' ability to close out on and make life miserable for Clay and Steph is easier than the Warriors' ability to try to do the same thing to Kyrie and LeBron. The difference being LeBron's ability to get inside with bull strength and slashing quickness and athleticism that Curry or Thompson can match. Great X's and O's discussion there. Thank you so much for the call. Let's get out, take that time out that we should have taken 4 minutes ago, and come back with more of your calls on the table.
Kyrie Irving's jump shot is good. James drives and easily finishes. And James off to a good start. James jumper. Again, LeBron James has the perimeter game going. Irving, crossover, pull up, got it. Here's Irving. Steps back. Kyrie Irving. Beautiful jumper from Irving. What a first half he's had. Spates gives him some room. James knocks it down. This might be the best we've seen his outside jumper consistently in the playoffs. James fakes. James drives. James finishes. And the foul. And a chance for a three-point play to tie the game. Irving gets free. Banks it in. And a foul. James with four to shoot. Gonna have to knock up a three. And does. Irving on the drive. Banks shot is good. Kyrie Irving again. Love finds James, who got free, and an easy two. Now this is the largest lead of the game for the Cavaliers. Nearly falls, drives now, spins back, tough fall away, shot, it's good. Kyrie Irving steps back, he tries another three. That's good. LeBron James from downtown. Irving from three, bang. Kyrie Irving from way downtown. Irving drives, well defended, ball knocked away by Barnes. Iguodala ahead to Curry, jumper in pursuit, blocked by James, rejects it out of bounds.
How many times have we seen this play to chase down, blocked by LeBron?
From a mental standpoint, it wasn't about anybody that was on the floor. We had a mindset that we wanted to come in here and just try to extend our period. That was our main concern. And we was able to do that. Our coach staff gave us a great game plan. And as one of the leaders of the team, we just went out and executed. You got a guy like this who's very special, probably one of the greatest performances I've ever seen live. Put on the show that he did, and then just go out and just follow the keys and play winning basketball. We did that tonight. The main thing is that we was able to give ourselves another chance. I understood the magnitude of this game. I knew how great of a team we were playing, but you know, at this point, it's whatever it takes. You know, making shots and things of that nature is something that you really can't control. Sometimes the ball go in, sometimes it don't. How hard you play, how locked in you are on the keys to get a victory.
Repeat a performance like this would definitely be tough, but whatever it takes to win, be very well prepared for game six. But that's the only thing that's on our mind right now is we're not satisfied. We understand the magnitude of what game six means for us at home. We know that it'll be an incredible level that they're going to play at, and we have to play at an even better level. When we stop caring about what everyone else said, honestly, what goes on in our locker room, I've said it multiple times, as long as we're taking care of what's going on in our locker internally, we can power through anything.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two of the extravaganza rolling on. We are already into it a bit because we ran long in the first hour. Thanks so much for your patience. And again, anybody who is left on hold was not intentional. We just had a little bit of a tech glitch here. So we ran a little long with our last caller. This hour is guest free, which means a lot of opportunities for you to get in. You want to talk about the NBA Finals. You want to talk about the Draymond Green impact. You want to talk about the amazing performance of Kyrie Irving. And, you know, Jim, we spent a lot of time in the first hour, as a lot of people last night on the national telecast and people on national radio, ESPN, Mike and Mike and all the rest. Everybody's talking about the incredible LeBron James answer given the fact that he did not play especially well in game number four, and he was the one who was the target of the criticism by Klay Thompson, by Draymond Green. They're taunting him about having his feelings hurt, and that he got punched, but he didn't really do any damage, and it was his fault anyway. He stepped over Draymond Green in game four and kind of initiated this whole thing. Then he whined to the media about it, which forced the NBA's hand to give him a flagrant. All of that stuff people talked about. And LeBron's answer last night cannot be overstated. It was phenomenal. But yet it was Kyrie's performance, Kyrie Irving, who looked like, to be quite honest, the most dominant offensive player on the floor last night. And it looked like that not just to media and not just to me. It also looked that way to LeBron James himself, who said this about Kyrie.
Kyrie's only played six games in the NBA Finals. What was it about his performance that really was, you know, epic for you?
Just calm. Just calm for 48 minutes. Obviously, he played 40 minutes, but even the 8 minutes that he was sent down, he was just calm. Timely bucket after bucket and led our team. Fourth quarter, he hit timely shot after shot after shot when those guys were trying to get back into the game. Defensively, he was phenomenal as well, guarding Steph and guarding the rest of those guys, whoever he was matched up on. They tried to post him a few times with Harrison Barnes, and he was just made it tough on him. Got his hand on the ball a couple times in the post. He was just locked in on both sides of the floor. So that's what I saw, and that's why I said what I said.
Well, what he said and that he's referring to was really an unbelievable statement. Not unbelievable in the way that it's not true, but just talk about high praise. LeBron James declared that Kyrie Irving's performance last night was one of the greatest performances ever in the history of the NBA Finals. And that is an amazing thing to say when you consider some of the history of the NBA Finals, some of the heroics of Michael Jordan in the finals playing with a flu and 103-degree fever. The performance of Magic Johnson when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar could not go in Game 6 against the 76ers as a rookie point guard asked to play center for Kareem and going for 42 points and 15 rebounds as a point guard playing center. I mean, we can go on and on and on about some of the great performances. LeBron James declared that Kyrie Irving's performance was one of the most impressive in the history of the NBA Finals for a Finals game. And you know what? I am equal parts amazed at his recognition of that and B, that he publicly wanted to say so. Because the story here is that the two of them combined for 82 points. The two of them are the first two in the history of the finals as teammates to score 40 points in the same game. It was kind of a Batman and Robin or a 1A and 1B kind of a thing. And LeBron, again, who's really never met a spotlight he didn't like, for him to turn all of the attention not to what they did as a duo or what he did, the leader and one of the all-time greats, for him to recognize Kyrie and say that's the cat that had one of the most amazing performances in finals history, to say that publicly, it speaks volumes about where they are together as a team right now, Kush.
No, that's a really, really good point because, you know, it shows that how highly LeBron thinks of Kyrie and what happens when they're both going well. I mean, you know, he to a certain degree, you know, couldn't miss. What's more impressive, you know, and we'll get to the Draymond Green part of the whole equation here in a bit, but what's so impressive is to do that on the road. And with LeBron, we can reference the past. As we were talking yesterday saying, well, this is the time for game five against the Pistons, LeBron, to show up. But Kyrie, for obvious reasons, doesn't really have that in his background. There's not much you can reference to, whether it's in general playoffs or just the finals, because of, well, his career. He'd never even made the playoffs until last year. So for him to be able to shoot like that, you know, on the road has been so absolutely, you know, impressive to me. And they needed it a whole bunch. I mean, this was a tie game due to Klay Thompson's heroics in the first half. And then they ended up pulling away because those two basically couldn't miss. I mean, we talked about LeBron's jumpers, and if you're an opponent, that's when you're scared to death because, oh, man, now he's making jumpers, so now we got to send somebody out there, which is going to open up the lane for him. But to get the other guy, in Kyrie in this case, to be able to do it too, and I know there's a lot of other Cavs fans thinking the rest of the team didn't play all that well. Yeah, that's true if you're talking
we'll cover
like,
that in a minute.
Exactly.
Let's cover that in a minute, but let's stay with Kyrie because to me, again, I don't think it's a matter of the other guy getting him to play that well too. I think Kyrie was the leader. I think Kyrie set the tone, not LeBron. As great as LeBron played, and you've heard me do nothing but praise him for answering the bell, especially, you know, with the challenge before him from the Golden State fans, the national media, people like Stephen A., all of the free Draymond, LeBron's crying, got Draymond Green suspended, all that garbage. I'm not gonna do anything to diminish the performance of LeBron James.
Oh, absolutely, because
to
we
me,
saw an all-time great, what happens when you poke the bear. That's
yeah,
basically
exactly.
To me the story about LeBron. They poked the bear and it came up snake eyes on him.
But he still didn't lead. To me, the story was Kyrie. Kyrie was the one dribbling circles around people and making circus shots. And 5 out of 7 from three. His 41 points on 17 of 24 from the floor. And at one point, 9 of 11. And then 12 out of 15. We're talking about a performance that LeBron, I think LeBron is right when he says it is one of the all-time great performances. And he said that in the postgame, not in the press conference at the podium, but right on the sideline. I believe this is it with Doris Burke. Let me see if we can hear this. And we're going to try to hear this. Hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Essentially is going through the finals for the first time.
He's a very humble kid. Very appreciative of his moment. But that was special. That was special. That will go down in the all-time greatest performances in finals history.
I'm going to stop it there only because of the poor audio quality. It's really off mic. But what you heard LeBron say there was, at least I hope, he said that will go down as one of the all-time performances in NBA finals history. Talking about Kyrie. And so to me, I think even he agrees. He didn't lead the way yesterday. He had his own thing to deal with, obviously, and I think he did it like a champion. And I don't mean that in a championship sense, like, you know, they're going to win this championship. But I mean just the way he responded was how a champion would. But I think that Kyrie was the tone setter. He was the scorer early when they needed big buckets. It seemed like every time the Warriors would come down in that first half, which ended up, of course, tied at half, every time they would come down and hit a three and then hit a two on the next trip down, the Cavaliers had an answer, and almost every time it was Kyrie saying, okay, you got that one, well, here's this one. Oh, yeah, you just did that, well, here's this one. He just kept them alive, and when he wasn't doing it, it was LeBron, rather than it was LeBron doing it and occasionally deferring to Kyrie. I really think that the motor of that vehicle yesterday was Kyrie Irving and not LeBron James, and that's why even LeBron recognized it as such.
Yeah, and one could definitely make that argument. Another way to look at it too is the breakdown by quarter in a way. What do I mean by that is basically both guys were almost even in points scored per quarter as it went on. The only one that really had a big difference was Kyrie had 12 and LeBron had 5 in the fourth, but to the Cavs' credit, they were pulling away at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. And those 12, by the way, weren't garbage time 12.
No.
His 12 were actually what helped them and got them to pull away in the early portions and middle portion when that game was indeed salted away by the Cavaliers. Now, to the other point you were talking about, and again, we want to open the phone lines back up at 866-240-1065. If you'd like to get in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket. To the other point that you just made, and a lot of people are talking about, and Rick Nolan and I even talked about it a little bit, and that is, where is the help going to come from on Thursday night? Because as great as Kyrie was, as dominant as LeBron James was with his 41, 16, and 7, they did not get anything at all from the third member of the Big Three. And it's not like Kevin Love was bad. Kevin Love just did not assert himself or find an opportunity to assert himself. It wasn't a game in which he was, 3 for 14 and just couldn't hit anything. It was a matter in which he just didn't get any opportunities or take advantage of them when maybe he could have. He took 5 shots, a very mysterious J.R. Smith-like disappearance of offensive aggressiveness. You know, JR in the first two games in Golden State took three shots in one, six shots in the other, and quite clearly we know he's a guy who needs to get double-digit shots every game. He needs to stretch defenses, launch balls. He attacks the rim and did that a little bit yesterday in the first half too. But this was J.R. Smith-like in that regard. Love only took five shots in the game. Three of them were from three, and he made one. One shot, I mean, it was a two. He had four fouls. He only had three rebounds even in 33 minutes on the floor. So people are going to be saying, well, where is the help coming? Because there's no way Kyrie and LeBron can combine for another 82 points on Thursday night, even though it's at home. That performance, as great as it was, as special as it was, is just that. It's special. And when something is special, that means it's not the norm. When something is that special, it's something that doesn't happen with regularity. It just can't happen again. 17 for 24 and 16 for 30. And I'm going to do the quick math there and figure out that that's, what, 33 for 54. I don't know what their combined shooting percentage is, but that's pretty doggone spectacular. So you got Kyrie and LeBron doing something they just almost guaranteed cannot do again. So will Kevin Love be able to step up and give more than the two? Will he be able to put up a double-double? Will J.R. Smith, who was aggressive in the first half, he took nine shots, he made three, one of them was a three. He also had three free throws to get his 10 points. Will he be that way more in the second half to take some of the pressure off of LeBron and Kyrie? That's going to be the issue here, because quite frankly, it's just become apparent through five games, they're going to get next to nothing from their bench. Richard Jefferson coming off the bench did provide 8 points. He was 4 for 6. You know, we all know he started in game four and Love came off the bench, and now it was back to the normal routine. Shumpert had 4, and that's it. They had 12 points off the bench, and that's it. So if they're going to find scoring to assist and help LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, it's going to come from the trio of Love and Thompson and J.R. Smith. Which of them is ready to step up and have a big-time scoring game Thursday? Because they just can't count on LeBron and Kyrie to be that hot and carry the team to 82 combined points between them a second time.
And that's especially relevant for, obviously, Game 6. Somebody else offensively for the Cavaliers has to be able to do something, because defensively, the Warriors are going to be a little more with it. I mean, with Green being able to be back in lineup. And, you know, don't misunderstand. There's a myriad of reasons why that game went the way it did, and only one of those various reasons was the whole Green not being there. But it's going to change Golden State's defense a little bit. And
by the way, when he does come back on the floor, Jim, you know what I think they ought to do?
What's
send,
that?
Send Delly out there to guard him. Just send Delly to guard him, and I mean be what Delly is. A pain in the rear end. A swatting, poking, jabbing, bodying pain in the rear end that'll goad Green into doing, and this is what they accuse LeBron of doing by stepping over him. They accused him of trying to goad him into doing something to get a flagrant. But you know what? Let's do it this time, because LeBron didn't. Put Delly out, because every flagrant he gets from this point on, he's gone, right?
I believe that's how it works, but now that you're making me want to double check that to make sure.
I know that if he gets another flagrant, he gets another suspension. I don't know if that takes effect, though, in that game. Maybe it still has to be a flagrant, too, to get the ejection from that game. But anyway, that's just, you know, a little kind of side humor. Draymond Green not being there certainly was a good thing for the Cavs. He was responsible for it because he can't control his own temper. Get somebody out there and make him lose his temper again. Somebody like Delly could do just that. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and the other thing, though, is but in general, it's about somebody else being able to do something. One would think that being back at home, if he gets any kind of a rhythm, Love may be able to be that guy. Here's another guy to keep an eye on, because due to his fouls that he had early in the first half, and, you know, let's call a spade here. Delly's kind of been awful in this series.
Yes,
a complete opposite of where he was in the finals a year ago, especially the part before he got dehydrated and all that.
Which is why I said maybe the best way to use him is to go be a defensive pain in the rear end.
Right.
Offensively, he is just not there right now.
But outside of that, something to keep an eye on when the Cavs do go to the bench in Game 6 is something that happened in Game 5, but it may have gone unnoticed because it was only for about three real-time minutes, only maybe about a minute and a half of gameplay, and then Kyrie was back in. Did you notice they put Mo Williams in there in the third quarter?
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you're going to do what you're saying about Delly with Green, yeah, his defense isn't that good, but no one would argue that Mo v. Delly, Mo is the better shooter. So maybe you go with maybe that's an interesting. Basically, keep an eye on that. I have a feeling that Ty Lue is going to go to Mo Williams for the Kyrie Irving breather in Game 6 at least at one point. So that's something to keep an eye on, because if you get him an open shot and he makes one, he's the type of guy who could have a small run too. So that's one guy.
He's a poor man's Kyrie.
Yes.
And an older man's Kyrie. Kyrie, obviously, because of that, he is a shoot-first point guard like
exactly.
Kyrie is. And last year, he had a couple of 50-point games.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, didn't he have two of them?
I know he had the one. I don't remember about the two. And then
I'm sorry. He had a 50-point game. Kyrie had two 50-point games.
Yeah, Kyrie had two, but Mo Williams had one with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Don't forget, you know, thinking of this season in a Cavs uniform, he averaged 14.5 or just about 14 points when he was starting at the beginning of the season in place by Kyrie.
Yep, before he got hurt, and then he just basically fell out of the
rotation. So that's something to keep an eye on. That could be an interesting place where they could possibly find some. We didn't get to see it yesterday because it was only in for about a minute and a half, but it wasn't garbage time. But, yeah, somebody else has to step up. And since in this matchup, and this is obviously something that's going to get talked about, win or lose this series for the Cavs, we know this subject is going to come up over the course of the summer, the what do you do with Kevin Love thing. And I still maintain, don't start jumping off of bridges on this one yet, because I keep maintaining, Bob, that there's just something specific in this matchup against the Warriors that's really providing problems for a guy like Kevin Love, especially when Kevin Love's not doing it from the offensive end.
Yeah.
Because, let's face it, most of the rest of the teams in the league, Love doesn't have these problems against. Certainly didn't have these problems outside of those two road games in Toronto against anybody else in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Sometimes it's just about a specific matchup. And
sometimes it's also about the way a team is playing the series.
Yeah.
And I mean his team. And in this series, particularly the last couple, you know, remember he missed game three because of the concussion.
Right.
You know, LeBron and Kyrie have essentially taken over, and they're taking the vast. Look, the team took 83 shots.
Yep.
LeBron and Kyrie took 54 of them, well over half of them. And that leaves far fewer shots for the other supporting pieces, including Kevin Love. So he took 5 shots. He made 1. If you give him 10, you know, there's a pretty good chance he's going to get a little hotter and make 4 of them or 5 of them, and then you've got that extra piece there. So I agree. Let's not freak out right now that Kevin Love only had the 2 points and the 3 rebounds. There are the
And really, it's when we say that, Bob, or at least when I and when we say that, or at least when I say that, it's not for people to freak out necessarily about this series. I think this particular series, it is what it is, and quite frankly, Kevin Love may be more valuable off the bench. He did have 11-5 off the bench in the game 4 loss.
But Richard Jefferson had a terrible
true, and that's why he was back in the starting lineup. But right. It's one of those
Jefferson,
things.
This, by
is,
the way,
this
was
is an
more,
off-season hold thing,
on.
And I don't want anybody to just
hold
jump
on,
to conclusions yet.
Hold on. Richard Jefferson is much better in the bench role. You know, he was
ideally, yes.
Yesterday. You know, coming off of the bench 14 minutes and scoring 8 points and having 3 steals, too. So he's, you know, this is probably still the best way to go. By the way, I mentioned the 54 shots that LeBron and Kyrie took, and I was looking for a percentage. They were 33 of 54, 61% as a duo. And from 3, they were 9 of 17, also 60% for crying out loud. So when you get that kind, or I'm sorry, that's 53%. I beg your pardon. Hold on. 9 for 17 is actually 53%. You get 53% shooting from 3 for those two guys. LeBron was 4 of 8, and Kyrie was 5 of 7. Forget about it. But the problem is you can't count on that again, and that's why we have to get into this Love, JR, Tristan type of thing.
Right.
All right, let's go to Dave in Toledo. Dave, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're talking NBA Finals. Thanks for the time. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
No problem, guys. How are you doing? I don't have any dog in the hunt. I'm a Milwaukee Bucks fan, but I played college basketball, and I watch just a boatload of games every year. And my friends that are Cavs fans are so concerned what's going on offense. And even though they won, and they won big, I think that really, if you look at the fact that they still allowed Golden State to have 17 wide open, I know they didn't make any of them, But to, it I don't understand how they can, as well as Golden State can shoot, how they continue to get wide open shots. When they drive, they're very ineffective. If you watch Golden State, unless they're on the fast break and it's transition, but they hardly ever look to score driving to the basket. And
I don't know if I agree with that. When you look particularly at game four, when you look particularly at game four, you know, the stats are going to show 38 points for Steph Curry, and you're going to show a boatload of threes, too. But how many times did he break somebody down off the dribble and go right to the basket and either score himself or give that little drop pass to Draymond or to Bogut or somebody else? That is a mistake. I think it's a misnomer to say that they are just a jump-shooting team that doesn't go to the basket, because they get plenty of inside work. They really do.
No, I didn't say that they stopped. The problem is take Steph Curry out of the equation, because he's different. And by the way, when he does go to the basket, he's going to throw six dumb passes right to you if you stay out at the three-point line, because he plays cute and he thinks the game is fun all the time.
Yes, he does. That's very true.
But Klay Thompson can't go to the basket. He attempts to go to the basket, but he's much better one dribble threes or just running the floor and catching the ball. Harrison Barnes the same way. Draymond Green, even when he drives, doesn't go. Now, Livingston, to me, is the guy that's the X factor for them many times, because he does everything. But I don't understand why they collapse, like even when Klay Thompson has. And I know that's X and O's, and that's not good for your show to talk about. But
Hold on. I trust the intelligence of this audience with that, and we have talked X's and O's. And everybody who's listening to us right now is probably watching every game as the coach, Van Gundy, and the others diagram this stuff. So it's okay.
Right.
I guess I would challenge the notion that they're leaving guys wide open as much as you're saying, and collapsing. What I'm seeing more often than not is challenges to their great shooters, but their great shooters sometimes just make great shots. And secondly, sometimes it's not necessarily that the defense is giving a shot up, but they do. You know, Steve Kerr is not a fool. He knows what it's like to get open for three. It's what he spent his entire career doing as a spot-up shooter. They run a great offense of motion where they get switches on guys and picks and little step backs that allow these guys to get open threes no matter what the defense's intention is.
Those are different, but what I'm talking about is when they're penetrating from the strong side, and you have Richard Jefferson and Shumpert when they come in, and these guys, and maybe it's because they're subs and they're trying to make a play here or there, they're very inconsistent about where they should be, the floor balance. And to the last thing that I'll say is where I was trying to run, and I know it took a while to get there, Mozgov, when he's on the floor last year and this year against Golden State, I know for some reason people think it's a bad thing to do because he's big. I'm not an analytics guy, but when they showed, it's like plus 16 when he's on the court against Golden State. Why he's not getting any minutes, regardless of who the other four are, it makes no sense to me. And it's got to be a Tyron.
And I think it's just, I mean, are you going to take Tristan out more often? Because I think they just really believe that Tristan's activity on the offensive board is so much more impressive and much more consistent than Mozgov's is, that they just can't do that. They have him at the center, and without, and especially now with Bogut being out. Now they really have very, very, very little size. You can get away with an undersized person playing center the way Tristan Thompson is and does. And I just think that Tyronn Lue says we can't have Tristan Thompson and that presence on the offensive glass down to give Mozgov or anybody else any significant minutes. That's all I can suspect there.
I really think, though, that if they went big a little more often and they decided to play their, even if they get beat with the dribble, play their bigs and then crash the offensive boards, because I noticed that's where, when Cleveland really goes after the offensive boards and is relentless, that's the two games they've dominated. And for whatever reason, maybe it's just those guys can't recover after 2 days or the travel, but when the big guys are relentless on the offensive boards, they've wore out Golden State, and Golden State has missed more three, you know, the more you get banged, the more you get chipped. I know all these old-timers sometimes sound foolish because these Golden State guys shoot ridiculously, but it is true. If you can get away with hand checks and bumps and all the other stuff with bigger players, they're going to shoot a lower percentage, and I really think that would help Cleveland. And thank you for listening to me talk so long.
I'm glad you did, Dave. Really good stuff. No, thank you.
Thank you.
Good call.
Have a good day, sir.
You got it. Please call back again after game six. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. That's an intelligent call. Guy knows his basketball. I would not commit too often to crashing the boards against them, because the Warriors are at their best when they get out and they run in transition. If they get that game into a horse race because the Cavs are sending two guys to the offensive glass hard every time, and they only have probably, given the spacing on the floor, one or two guys able to get back and try to stop a break, the Warriors are going to run. And when they get running and flying around and hitting transition threes, and then, you know, somebody ball fakes and gets a pass to a cutter for a transition dunk and all the stuff that they do, when they blow teams off the floor, that's what they do. The shot clock becomes irrelevant. They're never taking that much time off of it. They're not playing half court. They're just running and getting shots up quickly, Loyola Marymount style, for those who remember that style back in the 80s. I've talked about that before. I think that's the concern. They don't want to send too many people to the offensive glass because they got to get back and slow the Warriors down. The one guy who they don't worry about with that is of course, Tristan Thompson. They send him to the offensive glass, and for goodness sakes, he's so active, he's so energetic, and he's so successful at doing so. They don't really need to commit anybody else. They don't need to get Mozgov in. They don't need to, and I know we're talking about him maybe more on the defensive end too, but they don't really have to. Tristan Thompson is a one-man offensive rebounding machine in many ways. And that's not to diminish anybody else, but what that guy does is dispirits. I think he dispirits the opponent when he crashes the offensive glass as often as he does. He gets sometimes more offensive rebounds in a game than he does defensive rebounds. That shouldn't be possible, but he does it. So it's just a style matchup thing, I guess, that Tyronn Lue is seeing, and he really believes that with the Warriors getting out and running, it's important to get back. Mozgov doesn't run the floor nearly as well to do that offensively and defensively. It just might be. And again, without Bogut being there, and we don't know since he injured his knee yesterday, we'll see if he's back on Thursday. If they don't have a real big guy to contend with, answering with their own big guy like Mozgov, I don't know if is necessarily the right prescription. But we'll see. Time will tell. All right, let's get a quick time out of here for Bottom of the Hour Sports Center. Get a few more phone calls before we're done. If you'd like, get in at 866-240-1065. Talking NBA Finals, the Cavaliers' unbelievable victory, and forcing a Game 6 in Cleveland, one that I feel very, very, very good about for a variety of reasons. We may indeed be going down to a Game 7, 48 minutes to decide the title back in Oakland, which would be, what, Sunday. We'll see. Before we take this time out for the Sports Center, let's remind you again about the Ticket Suite deal of the week. And for this week, it is exactly what you'd want as we get into the dead of summer, which is on its way. How about staying cool? $130 four-pack of gift certificates to Splash Universe in Dundee, right next to Cabela's. You can log on to 1065theticket.com starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. to get one of those $130 gift certificates for just $35. It's like a third of the cost, maybe less. I'm not doing the math, but I'm going to tell you what, it's a great deal. That's tomorrow morning starting at 9 at 1065theticket.com. Or we'll give you a freebie right now. That's right. We'll give you a free $130 four-pack gift certificate to Splash Universe to the 10th caller to 866-240-1065 from your friends at The Ticket.
Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
The extravaganza rolling on, and actually steam rolling toward the finish line. Coming up here in just a few, we're going to have Drive Time. Mike Miller coming your way on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But we have time for a call or two more if you want to get in quickly. Got to dial now, though, 866-240-1065 as we, again, listen to a little bit more of the aftermath of game number 5 last night. Out in Oakland, Kevin Love, again, was kind of a no-show in terms of offensive aggressiveness. He played 33 minutes, but somehow only got 5 shots up. Is that a matter of not wanting to shoot? Was it a matter of deferring to other guys? A couple of times it looked like he was going in strong to get shots up. It got stripped on the way, so those don't go as shot attempts, even though it might have been an attempt to score. You know, I mean, there is a way to you can try to score without actually having a shot attempt. If you are driving and maybe you get mugged and there's no call, which happened a couple of times to Kevin Love, which I liked, by the way, because I don't like it if he takes, you know, 13 shots in a game and eight of them are jumpers from three. I want him doing what he did so well in Minnesota, and that's getting on the block, using a variety of moves, and getting the ball up and on the glass, getting to the foul line. But when he's not getting calls, he's not getting calls. At any rate, Kevin Love is going to be huge in Game 6, but he was talking about how huge Kyrie Irving was back yesterday in Game 5.
You know, he's really grown up a lot. He's an unbelievable player, and when he's playing like that, he's tough to stop.
We knew LeBron could have a game like this and close that game, but I guess most of us didn't really know that Kyrie's capable.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely capable. He has so much firepower, so much in his arsenal. He does so much for this team that we needed that out of him tonight, and he was great.
You know, and that part about the arsenal is so true, Kush, because he does. And I don't know if, you know, it's funny. When LeBron came back last year, you know, for the first time coming back last season, I kind of just would tell people who would listen to me that Kyrie is still the best offensive player on this team. And people would, of course, say, oh, you're just hating on LeBron, because I did.
Right.
I absolutely reviled and hated LeBron James for leaving, and not just for leaving, but the circumstances prior to his departure, which made it happen. And I'm not talking about the decision. I'm talking about efforts on his part with the Cavs. So, yeah, him coming back, you know, wasn't my favorite thing anyway. He's still not my favorite guy, although I will pay respects when respect is due. And what he did last night was extraordinary. But I kind of would tell people Kyrie, just from a skill set standpoint, is the best offensive player on this team, even with a four-time league MVP and former scoring champ on it. And nobody wants to hear that. But when he is playing his game his way, like he did last night, I still believe that. He and LeBron each scored 41 last night. But watching them, I still believe that Kyrie Irving's arsenal is the deepest on this team and one of the deepest in the league. His ability to score the ball from so many different places, outside, mid-range, finishing at the rim with either hand, and making guys just absolutely dizzy trying to find him because of his handle. His arsenal is still probably the deepest on this team.
And the biggest reason for that kind of comment having accuracy is because no one here would question that. As jump shooters, yeah, Kyrie's a better jump shooter than LeBron, because LeBron's just not a very good jump shooter. And that's really where the difference lies, I think, more than anything, because yeah, outside of that, they both can find ways to get to the rim. I've said this since before LeBron came back, because I was starting to see it in that 13-14 season, that, wow, nobody kisses it off the glass right now in the NBA like Kyrie. But it's him being a better outside shooter. I mean, this guy was also a three-point champ already in his career in one of those All-Star weekend things, so let's not forget that. And that's where what you said about maybe he is the best offensive player of the team, it's because he's definitely a better jump shooter. There's no question.
Well, that and he's a better ball handler.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me as much as even the jump shot. His ability, see, LeBron, and we've seen this time and again, when he doesn't have his jumper working, when he tries to go to the basket and he continues to lose the ball or get tied up or have it slapped away, he's, you know, he's 6'9 and 250 or 260. He shouldn't be the best ball handler. And because of that, he relies on strength and power to get in and score. And
the accuracy of his passing.
What's that?
And the accuracy of his passing.
Indeed, yes. No question about that. Whereas Kyrie, when he goes inside, I mean, he's got the ability to slither through three guys in the lane from the free throw line to the basket, and then finish on either side because of the handles. So it's the jump shot and the handles that make him, to me, such a more dangerous threat than even his four-time MVP teammate. But it was an amazing performance last night. Again, LeBron James even kind of calling what Kyrie did one of the greatest individual finals performances ever. And there have been some incredibly memorable finals games by individual players. That, to me, speaks
volumes. And now they and the rest of the team are going to have to do it one more time, and this with Green out back out on the floor, and that will create a few problems.
No doubt about it.
This is why the conversation at part of the hour, Bob, about somebody else coming up big and who's that going to be, that's why that is so key on Thursday night.
And you know what? They have continued to answer that bell at almost every turn. And somebody will do that. Sometime we've said, long said, J.R. Smith is always good for winning you at least one game of playoff series. And guess what? The finals hasn't been his forte in the last 2 years.
He was pretty effective in game three, though.
That's right. And I still think he can, be that factor. All right, that's it. It's all the time we got. Thanks so much for a great conversation on the finals. We'll do it again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And, of course, the rest of the sports news, since game four or six isn't until Thursday. But for now, Drive Time is coming with Miller. Stay right here on ESPN 106.